Meanwhile, the NBA is off and running here in Orlando.
Styles the riddle. Jump shot is up. It is good! Scott Styles with his 30th assist for the night, and that's the new NBA record.
With the first pick in the 1992 NBA draft, the Orlando Magic selects Shaquille O'Neal.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to report a trade.
Here's Hardaway. Neal hammer home on Ewing.
Clock is down to 12, and Anderson stole the ball. Hardaway picks it up. Two on one. Penny bounced past the grab.
Hello, Magic fans. Hocus Podcast coming at you after a brief hiatus of about a week, right? Was that about a week?
Yeah, about a week. It's good to be back.
I mean, the tank is in full-fledged force now. It's rolling down, you know, the turrets are out. We're commanding the tank firmly into the lottery. But the Magic are not necessarily saying that. So there's a strange narrative going on where we're watching a team plunge towards the bottom of the standings, yet maintaining this we-must-make-the-playoffs attitude. Quite a dichotomy, isn't it, Chris?
It is. It's frustrating for Magic fans, but I understand where the organization stands and how much they put into the season trying to make the playoffs. And with Frank Vogel being the coach, you know, what other position would you expect them to take? I mean, they are four games out of the playoffs, so you understand that he's advocating and he's trying to motivate his guys to step up and make a run. And, you know, I admire that, but at the same time, at the outside looking in, I just don't think we have enough firepower to make a run.
It's really tough to watch, and I want to conduct a poll at some point. I don't know if we can throw a poll up on the blog or not on what we have, but I'm going to try to maybe hit somebody with a bigger Twitter account because I don't have enough followers that it would mean anything. But I want to see how many Magic fans are watching every game right now. Every game.
That would be a good poll. That's interesting.
Because I think when the team's good, that hovers probably well over 50% of the people that watch every game, and it's got to be under 50% right now because this is the fifth year sans Dwight Howard, and things have not gotten better. This team is not any better than it was the first year under Jock Vaughn. I don't see it. I mean, maybe they'll win a handful of more games, eight more games than that first season when they won, 24? But I don't see that as progress. That's variation, you know? Progress is something tangible that can be built upon, and there's very little of that. That said, I'm interested to watch Aaron Gordon again tonight against Houston. See, the Magic will keep me watching against these more exciting teams, and that's a full admission that I've missed most of the last couple games. I watched brief segments of both. I like watching Houston. I like Orlando when they try to play like a current-era team. And fortunately, against Houston, Elfrid Payton seems to want to match the tempo rather than lay back and try to slow it down and play a grinded-out game that Houston is not going to allow anyway. Houston makes teams run with them, and that'll be fun. Aaron Gordon had a huge game last time against Houston. I expect the same.
Yeah, he did. He played really good against Houston last game. I'm trying to go ahead and look at the stats on the last game that we played against them.
I know he had 38.5 on DraftKings, but I can't give you his real line. So if you're doing – that's a perfect segue. Hop on the segue. If you're doing the NBA draft tonight, Draft is the app. ABPN is the promo code to get a full match on your deposit. And if you can land Aaron Gordon, I think tonight's the night to do it. So if he has a bad game, you can blame me because I think he's going to have a good one. And I have him. So if you lose on Aaron Gordon, you lose with me tonight.
Yeah, Draft was really fun. I played it last night. I ended up winning. I had LeBron, and he went off for me. I had Dragic, Lowry, and they were just raining threes. I mean, you got to know how to draft. You got to watch the games. You got to know what you're doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, tune in. And if you don't have League Pass, then you're missing out on an awfully formed product, but there's no other way to watch all these games. And I mean, like, it's not that I haven't been watching basketball, Magic fans. I have. I missed the last two Magic games. I apologize from the bottom of my heart. I did watch several other games, and most notably while the Magic were on. I mean, I was a horrible Magic podcast host, you know. But I'm gonna make up for that tonight. I'll have something really big from the Houston game, some kind of major takeaway that's going to blow your mind. Probably not. But we're going to watch the game, and hopefully Aaron Gordon has a good one, because I'm saying he's going to.
Yeah, last time we played Houston, Aaron Gordon had 18 points. He shot 7 of 14 from the field, 2 of 6 from deep. He had 7 assists, which is kind of kind of a standout game and assist for him. So, yeah, he didn't have a bad game. And Houston had a pretty poor shooting game. James Harden was 5 of 15, and Eric Gordon was 7 of 20.
Aaron Gordon can do what he does best against Houston, which is get that long rebound, put it on the floor for two dribbles, and make a pass. That's how he got 7 assists, I'm pretty sure, if I remember right. It was a lot of transition, him igniting a break really quick and throwing it to someone for a dunk. It wasn't in the half court, if I recall. So at least three or four of the assists were transition. So this is a team that I really like Aaron Gordon against. I think Serge Ibaka fits well against Houston, too. I pray for Evan Fournier. He's going to have a tough game if he has to cover James Harden, and I think he probably will for large tracks of it. Aaron Gordon will certainly get his call there some, maybe. But Evan Fournier, he's not a bad – he's an average defender, but James Harden's the best scorer, arguably, in the entire league, and possibly the MVP. And it's going to be a tough game. Let me look at the line here. Because I have to figure the Magic are at least 8-point underdogs, but I don't know that yet, and I'm curious.
I'm not sure. Honestly, if I were Vogel, I would put Fournier on Ariza. I think Ariza's like, 6'8"? So is Evan.
Okay, the Magic are much bigger underdogs than that. They're 11.5-point dogs tonight.
Yeah, I mean, it's not actually surprising the way that we're playing.
That's pretty rough. You don't win a lot of games as double-digit at Vegas underdogs. And the over-under for the game is at 223.5, which means that they believe Houston will set this pace and keep it a high-scoring game. I would expect the Magic score 105 points and the Houston score 120, something along those lines. It's a game I would bet Houston covers the spread being at home. Though the Magic have been better on the road this year in one of those strange anomalies, I don't read much into that. But looking at it from a betting standpoint, I like Houston to cover the 11.5-point spread, and I like the over on the 223, actually. So, if you're betting that, you know, don't blame me again, because I'm not betting that. I don't bet sports games anymore, just the fantasy. So check out Draft. It's fun. All these apps are a lot of fun, and if you're putting money on the line that you can't afford to lose, then it's not fun. So don't do that. That's always my word of caution. Bet if you can't bet more than $5, don't bet more than $5. In other words,
don't let us get you addicted to gambling. That sucks.
No, I spent 2 years of my life wasted playing online poker, just massive amounts of hours to make a pittance of money. And let me tell you, those are years of my life I'll never get back, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't lose money. I didn't, like, suffer or anything, but I was damn sure wasting my time, you know?
Yeah. It's a spiral, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And time is money. So if you're wasting your time, if you're spending 6 hours making your $5 fantasy lineup, you need to rethink your priorities, in other words, as well.
Yes.
That's just a digression, though, because there are people making serious money on this. I don't understand how. But that anyway, I avoid those people. I play casual contests against people that don't know what they're doing like me, and it's a lot of fun. So there you go. We'll close on that, the fantasy note there. Moving back to the world of basketball. Other games on the slate tonight, for those of you that are going to have two monitors like me and have the Magic running on one and another game on the other, we got Brooklyn and Charlotte. Charlotte's 10.5-point favorites. Brooklyn is still Brooklyn. Man, I really like Brook Lopez. I feel bad for him. And then the other game is Portland and Dallas at 7:30 Central, 8:30 Eastern. Portland is 1.5-point favorites. Dallas is playing much, much better. Oh, man, they look like a team all of a sudden. So, like, I spent a lot of time ripping Dallas early in the year. They were in dreadful teams I hate to watch article on my podcast blog. But now I don't dread to watch them anymore. Yogi Ferrell is really, really good. I have a love-hate relationship with Deron Williams because at one time he was one of my favorite guards, and now he doesn't play like that anymore. But he still does sometimes. And if you can get those sometimes in daily fantasy sports, you luck out pretty well. But Deron Williams is pretty inconsistent. Dirk Nowitzki is still Dirk Nowitzki, man. When he catches down on the block, he's going to score. Yeah, I like Dirk Nowitzki as like a 45-year-old center. You know, if he could just hang on that for another 8 years or something like that. Like, yeah, he'd bring off the bench for like 10 minutes a game a la Tree Rollins and get a few buckets from him and just play till you're 45, Dirk.
That's funny. Yeah, Dallas is a team that is playing really well. I mean, they beat the Cavs like a week ago or so, and they—I mean, that's what happens when you have a good coach. Look at Rick Carlisle; should be a Hall of Fame coach. I mean, the guy's a genius.
He's good.
He gets the most out of his players, and I feel like, I mean, this is gonna be a digression, but that speaks to, you remember that riff when Rondo was there, and him as Rondo got into it.
Yeah.
Speaks volumes about Rajon Rondo when you get in a riff with Rick Carlisle like that.
Bro, Rajon Rondo has one of the worst attitudes in the NBA.
In the NBA, yeah.
Absolutely.
Just slight digression. But Dallas, they are playing really, really good. And Yogi Ferrell, you know, they gave him a chance. He came in, he took it and ran with it. And
it's like it's Yogi sanity, bro. It's Lin sanity with Yogi, you know.
They have been playing three guard lineup, like small guards, and it was interesting to me. They would play Seth Curry,
Barea.
They would play, and they played Deron Williams all at the same time. Those would be their starters, or they would throw in Wesley Matthews. I was curious how they were guarding the small forward position with such a small defender, but mm-hmm. it doesn't seem like it's hurting them. Mm-hmm. Seems like they're playing small ball. It's helping them.
Oh, the Clippers are doing the same thing. You know, they're playing Felton at small forward, and Austin Rivers at the two spot. You know, and going really small just like that. It's surprising how you can hide guards on small forwards a lot if it's the right kind of small forward. You know what I mean?
With Orlando, because he tries to play DJ and CJ and Alfred.
Yeah.
Doesn't work.
Well, I know you remember the days when the Magic would post up Nick Anderson, and when a lot of two and threes posted up back to the basket stuff. You see so little of that now that you can throw a 6'3 Raymond Felton or a 6'3 Deron Williams at small forward if you're the Clippers or Mavericks and hide it just fine. Aaron Gordon would penalize that really badly in the post if Aaron Gordon was locked in. But there's not a lot of small forwards that you can't hide a shooting guard or even a big point guard against now, and that's a change, you know, over what I saw when I started watching basketball in the late 80s and early 90s, because then you would have big guards that they would post up. Mark Jackson was a post up point guard. There's none of those in the league now.
No, the last post up point guard I want to say was Andre Miller.
Yeah, he was legit at that. Andre Miller had a really nice career. I liked Andre Miller a lot.
Because he was
so smart. And as a guy who himself happens to lack a lot of lateral foot speed, it was encouraging to watch him and notice how he would compensate for it so brilliantly by always making the right step at the right time. He never looked slow, but Andre Miller was incredibly slow. And he always looked competent. And I knew guards like that, but I could never be one, which was why I moved away from playing guard. But nevertheless, Andre Miller... The Magic need a guard that can control tempo. Alfred Payton can't. That's why they're going to lose badly to Houston tonight. When it comes right down to it, Beverly can really agitate Payton a lot, I think. Beverly is a super annoying defender. He's like Class A annoying defender. And those kind of guards, they give Payton problems sometimes. I've noticed. Yeah.
Schroeder's kind of like that, and Alfred Payton just went 3-12, and he had 0 assists.
They get in his head because he doesn't like having to, you know, to hustle at those times where they're pressuring the ball right at half court, you know what I mean? And he has to struggle just to get into the offense, and then the first pass occurs with 19 on the shot clock or 18 or 17, and you've wasted 8 seconds getting into the offense, you know what I mean?
Payton's definitely cooled off. Yeah, I mean, remember when we were on that road trip and I was talking about how the offense was being ran through them and we were looking better and the pace was better? We were in those games against Portland, Utah, and it lasted a good stretch and he was playing beautifully, and it's dissipated. I mean, the ball's gone back into Vucevic.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we're not playing well.
You know, I said about Payton that I still wasn't sold. I was almost sold. And he's done that now several times over these first few years of NBA basketball. His rookie year when he had those back-to-back triple-doubles, I was almost sold. But Payton has not strung it together for a long enough stretch to say this is a starting point guard on a contending team.
I thought this was going to sustain, and they were like, okay, this is how we're going to play the rest of the season with Alfred being the one that's initiate the offense, getting in the defense, collapsing it, and then using his ability to finish at the rim as the foundation. But, I mean, they've totally got away from it the last couple games. And it's, I mean, what's frustrating about Alfred is that, so he's not a shooter. His biggest ability offensively is to find teammates, make plays, and finish at the rim. But defensively is where he's called at. But defensively, he's looked lost on pick and rolls. He just let Dennis Schroeder get anywhere he wanted on the floor against Atlanta.
He definitely does a better job covering a scoring guard like Damian Lillard than a pick and roll guard like Chris Paul. He really does struggle with the good pick and roll guards.
Struggles a lot.
And I don't blame that all on Vogel, but some of it I do, because I think Skiles was really effective at trapping a lot of those pick and rolls and making him and Oladipo get out on it. Now, missing Oladipo is just as much a factor in this. Oladipo was a really good pick and roll defender, if you recall. I thought he was, at least above average.
I thought the defense was okay. I thought last season Peyton still struggled with screens. It was better, but...
I'm regretting the Oladipo trade really a lot, because I just watched Oklahoma City, and Oladipo's had a couple of really nice games in a row.
Yeah.
And looking absolutely like the best version of Oladipo, like what I think he should be as a player, the last couple games in OKC. And it was laced me with a deep sense of lament and remorse. And the only word that come to mind was myopic. It's short-sighted to trade a player that is about to peak for a veteran who already has plateaued in Serge Ibaka. Now, yeah. At the time, we thought this was a move that could propel the Magic towards contention, but the subsequent moves didn't make enough sense for that to occur. And the consequence is that we're watching Oladipo, who's re-signed with an extension in OKC. He's there for a while now. Flourish.
I don't know if he's going to flourish or not. I was okay with trading him, but for what we traded him for and how we did it, it was totally half-baked. I mean, if that's what we were going to do and that's how we were going to do it, I'd say keep him. But I could not stand Oladipo's mid-range game, his offensive game. I mean, there was times, I remember there was a game against Charlotte last season.
Yeah.
We were down six with like 2 minutes left. Oladipo gets on the fast break. It's him and Brian Robert, right? You're Victor Oladipo. You go up and you dunk the ball. You go to the line. He pulls up on the fast break around the elbow and misses it. Down six. It was frustrating. Oladipo was definitely, he was not my favorite or smartest player.
I understand he's kind of like the anti-Chartier player anyway, as far as your preferences for what you want from a guard. So like he's kind of like your Tobias Harris to me is Victor Oladipo to you. Our gripes with those guys are just too intractable to set aside and say that we want to roll with them as our starter. However, I still see Victor Oladipo thriving in a very sixth man like role where he comes off the bench for 28 breakneck minutes a game where he's playing at 155% and just diving after everything and going crazy Wade style. More than a guy you're relying on as a second option. Right now, that's what he is for OKC, actually. And he's doing well enough at that role right now. But OKC is going to have to add another major scorer at small forward to replace Durant. It fits too much with the way their team's constructed that they need a scorer at that spot. And Enes Kanter's been hurt. And he was playing phenomenal before he got hurt. It was just, I mean, he was turning in some incredible games. He still is a pretty poor defender, but he's actually improved a good bit on defensive end. And his Kanter is now in the right spot more than he's been in the past, which is like the first improvement you want from your defenders. And you can credit all of that to two guys. Steven Adams is one of them. He's been encouraging him a lot. And when they play together, they play really well. And the other guy is Nick Collison. Nick Collison's been in his ear the whole season as a guy on the bench that's playing no minutes a game, but making an impact by tutoring these younger players. Nick Collison's, that's why he's on an NBA roster, if you were wondering. I mean, he's a mentoring right now. And I see a jersey hanging on your wall, and that was going to be my next segue. Hop on the segue. Jameer Nelson is not really playing a ton in Denver. I would welcome Nelson back as a mentor for whatever guard we get. Now, that said, Nelson doesn't really embrace the role of mentor. He's not a guy that likes to mentor, but he does it anyway, reluctantly, and he does a pretty good job of it reluctantly. And Denver, when he's in the game, they play a much more composed game than when Moutier is in. And Nelson could be that pace-controlling guard. Like tonight, you could throw him in against Houston, and he could find a way to grind it out and slow it down some probably. Still useful. And, yeah, you got Nelson hanging on your wall back there. So, like, that just led me to that digression.
Right into it, yep. Yeah, that jersey right there is beautiful. I got that right before we made our finals run. It was right before the playoffs started. And that one, they weren't offering it. I had to do the custom, and then I put his name and number on there. He actually signed it. I got him, Victor, and Aaron Aflalo to sign it.
Very nice. But,
very, very, very nice jersey for me. But, yeah, Jameer Nelson, I mean, I thought that when we let him go initially, I understood it because it's like, okay, we got to establish a new culture. I understand at some point you're probably going to want to bring in a new point guard, so you don't want him to feel like he's just waiting or in the backups, you know, and you don't want to make Jameer feel like that. So I got it, but at this point in time, I mean, you might... If you're going to bring in DJ Augustine, you might as well bring in Jameer Nelson.
Right?
Yeah.
See, so, I mean, Jameer Nelson, and bring back Aaron Aflalo, too.
Yeah, it's...
I like Aflalo, and he's wasting his time in Sacramento.
He's wasted his time freaking bouncing around. I mean, he was featured here, and he was balling.
He could still be featured. There's nothing's falling off with him. He's just stuck in Sacramento. I mean, like... Players go to Sacramento to die.
They really do.
I mean, I'm not going to say Jimmer Fredette would have had a career on any other team, but when he was drafted by Sacramento, it sealed he would never have a career.
Jimmer Fredette, wow.
He won me a bet in Vegas, bro. I said to him, okay, BYU was 12.5-point underdogs against whichever team it was in the second round. I can't remember. I said, I bet you $1 against $12 that they win by double digits as 12-point underdogs. They won by 20-something, bro. I got $12 on a $1 bet against him.
Jimmer Fredette, he used to pull from deep.
Won me a 12-to-1 bet.
That was funny.
That was enough to buy one pack of cancer sticks in Vegas, bro. Everything is so expensive there. I thought that... And think, see, everybody, it's always so like Vegas is cheap because they want you to gamble. Lie. That's a huge lie. Everything was expensive. Food was expensive. I'm going to go back, though, someday.
Oh, Vegas is fun. Yeah. Super fun.
Yeah. I mean, like, everybody needs a weekend where they just have no principles and just waste a bunch of money and just don't care. And the time for that hasn't come with a baby here. But in a couple of years, I'm going to find the time for that.
Yeah, I stopped drinking, so if I go to Vegas, it'll be definitely gambling, and then it'll be more so like I'll go to a show. You know, the shows are surprisingly good. They're expensive, but they're good.
I don't really drink either. I'm the rare bird that's chain-smoking a pack of cigarettes drinking Sprite, you know, so.
Yeah, I see.
I just, like, when I went to the Orlando City soccer event with Phil, everybody was drinking beer, and Phil and I both don't drink. But I'm sitting there chain-smoking cigarettes. I'm like, I have my vice. I can't get rid of it. It's really, really hard. Like, don't smoke, kids, because, like, it's more addictive than other stuff I don't know about, but it has to be more addictive. Like,
yeah,
it is.
I never got into it, so I'm glad. But everyone has their vices. Yeah. Speaking of Vegas, though, I mean, with people talking about Miami being, like, you know, people go to Miami and, you know, Michael Beasley, drug problem. I mean, what if the NBA got a team in Vegas, which I know isn't out of the question.
It could happen, and I think that'd be phenomenal for the city of Vegas because it would fill up every night, obviously. It's a guaranteed sellout.
The Summer League does fantastic out there.
Oh, it's a guaranteed sellout and a home run. But every team would lose when they go to Vegas. And the Vegas team would win because – the fix is in, you know, first off. And second off, like, these teams are going to go to party in Vegas, and the Vegas team is going to get sick of partying in Vegas because they're going to be there all the damn time. So, I would expect a crushing home record from the expansion Vegas Vandals or whatever they call themselves.
That's a good point. Yeah, that would be fun. But I think the NBA is going to expand to either Mexico City or...
Well, I see Seattle as almost a lock.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to get it back. I know that the TV markets, they want to find a city that's going to bring in, because the league does league revenue sharing with the national. And so the team with the regional, you want to be able to build some type of some city that's going to be able to bring in that cash flow. I know Mexico City would add. It would increase everyone's revenue sharing.
Yeah.
Such a large market. And Seattle, I feel like it would. I don't think it would be as big as Mexico City. But just the pure prestige.
It's only been broken that the NBA is going to expand two teams, but I would not be surprised if they went two and then 2 years later go two again, like they did back when they added the Raptors and Grizzlies.
NBA is the only team, or the only sport out of the four major sports, I think, that can legitimately go global.
It's also the only one that's really growing at the rate it's growing.
Baseball
is kind of plateaued in America. It's America's sport. It'll be consistent for what it is. Football, it may be declining. There's evidence towards that.
I think it is.
And hoops, it continues to get bigger and bigger. Look at the influx of international players. That's what's allowed this expansion to make sense. There's now enough talent globally that they can field 500 good players and fill out that many rosters. Whereas back when I first started watching, there were guys like Mark Akers who would not scratch the league today. There were other guys, but he stands out as one guy in the Magic that never had a chance in today's NBA.
What about Greg Kite?
Kite would be a serviceable backup center a la Aaron Gray type, you know, banging around and getting his fouls and rebounds. He'd be good for 15 minutes a game behind another center. He wouldn't be like Jonas Valanciunas or anything. He had no offensive skill. But if you're big and strong and you're willing to bang, there's a place for you in the NBA if you're 7 feet tall. And Kite was a legitimate 7-footer too. So, but Akers was bad. Akers couldn't make layups. I have one clip on YouTube of Akers because I can't find anything else of him on there. And he's trying to chase down Jordan on a fast break. And then he stops like about eight feet behind him, and he's like, "What am I doing? I'm trying to chase down Michael Jordan. Am I going to block his shot? I'm Mark Akers." And it has thumbs down voted because it's a really crappy clip, but it was all I can find of Mark Akers. Like, if I wish I could put a low light reel together of Mark Akers missed layups and bricked free throws, and man, he was really bad. He shot like 52% from the floor, but all he shot were layups, so he was really shooting like 52% at the rim, which isn't good, you know? He was a bad player. But what I'm saying is there's now enough talent because of the global influx that we don't watch Mark Akers anymore. And Aaron Gray's not in the league either, so he was a bad example for Kite. Maybe Kite would have been in and out. Big men are a lot more, they're a lot more skilled now.
The five. What about Andrew DeClercq?
Remember him?
Yeah, well, if Tyler Hansbrough can be in the league, so can Andrew DeClercq.
True, very true.
Yeah.
But when you were talking about making a low light reel, I was thinking, and you know, I'm kind of bummed that the season's gone the way it's gone for the Magic, because I was hoping that between Peyton, Gordon, Hezonja, that one of those three would break, have a serious breakout, right? I mean, the odds are you got three of them. One's going to break out. And I was going to make a highlight reel with the song Seal, Kiss from a Rose. And it was all going to make sense. their peak. But it hasn't happened.
No. Now, you know, I wrote that the solution prior to the season to a lot of these problems that I anticipated happening was Mario Hezonja.
That's a sore spot for me. Because
he's a Swiss Army knife to a lot of these problems that the Magic have. But he's been, I mean, by all accounts at this point, I'm not saying he's a bust yet, but he's headed that direction.
He definitely could be. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to be biased about it. He definitely could be. I just, in my gut, when I see him, I just think he needs time, because when you're out there and you have a short leash like that, I mean, me and you talked about it, you get yanked, it does something with your mental state. Me and my professor were talking about it yesterday, and he was saying he's only shooting 28%, but when you watch him, you know he can shoot threes. You can just tell when someone can shoot threes. It's more than that. And we were talking, I said he does need to get stronger with the ball, and he pointed something out. he said that he goes, if you notice on his second dribble, it's too high and he gets ripped. And I was like, okay, professor, I see you. That's a good point.
Yeah.
But hey, Zonia, I mean, I put together a Prezi. I know it sounds weird. It's like the competition, the PowerPoint. But I have all these clips about that site you told me to go to, threeball.io.
Yeah.
And I was on there, and I was just looking at some Hazonia highlights. Hazonia is a playmaker out of the pick and roll. I can't say that about really any other player on our roster. Out of the pick and roll, he makes fantastic decisions with the ball.
He has really good court vision. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, every single highlight that I saw, he was throwing a lob to Biombo. It was never to Vucevic or Ibaka. I mean, him and Biombo have some great chemistry. I think they should explore that some more.
If I could enact a tank, it would involve playing Biombo, Hazonia, Aaron Gordon, and Elfrid Payton massive amounts of minutes.
Yes.
Okay, so the tank is on. I want to see the players that can be developed. That is where I stand on Magic basketball. We've already said and admitted, both of us, in a previous podcast, that we're more interested in watching player development than team development at this point. That's an unfortunate reality for a team when you're 13 games below 500. That I'm more interested in seeing which players can be a part of the core moving forward than what this team can offer as a collective unit, because I don't think that's very much. And that's kind of like been the overall theme of our first now 7 podcasts, is that if you can't play with the big boys and contend for real, scrap it and rebuild again. Because this hasn't worked, and I don't want to keep dwelling on that, but we're going to continue to look towards the draft, whether the Magic say they're tanking or not. We're gonna collectively call this a tank, and we're looking to have NBA draft experts on. If you're even a fan out there and you have your eye on a lot of these players and you want to talk draft with us, hit Chris or I up on Twitter. You know, I'm 33 Trigger. He's Chris, C-H-R-S, Chartier on there. C-H-A-R-T-I-E-R. So the draft has to be the focus right now, I think, and watching which players on the current roster would fit best with which each given prospect. Obviously, if you select a guy like Josh Jackson, you're not keeping Aaron Gordon at the 3 spot. You know, things like that now become important. Because yeah. I think when the Magic, even though they have to rebuild again, and that's clear, you're still operating from a standpoint where you're a good enough team to say we can draft based on team need. Because this is a core that will have needs, and one of those needs is shooting. And the other possibly, if the chance arises, is to get one of those elite point guards and go a different direction, because Elfrid Payton has not solidified his role yet as that guy. He's had every chance in the book now, albeit with different coaches and some instability there. But if you have Lonzo Ball or Markelle Fultz, you're drafting them. So I don't know that the Magic are going to be bad enough. This insistence on making the playoffs, I don't know how far that carries them. They're, obviously, Vegas doesn't think very far against Houston tonight to be 11.5-point dogs.
Yeah. I mean, we have our next 5 is Houston. We come home for Philly. We go on the road for Dallas and Miami. And then right before All-Star break, we play San Antonio at home. So we're not favored in any one of those games. The best chance to win is Philadelphia. I think Joel Embiid should be back by then. Dallas and Miami are both playing really well right now. Doesn't look good.
No, it doesn't. I just want it to be... I guess teams are never just going to admit they're tanking. Why am I even asking that?
Yeah, I mean, going forward, I think you see what you got. I mean, like you said, Payton's had every chance. I would take a different style point guard. If he's not going to come and play defense, and he's not going to give you the offense, if he's not giving you defense, he's not getting the offense, then what is he doing? You know, so I'd rather take a point guard like Dennis Smith Jr. if Ball and Fultz are off the board, and you go with Dennis Smith Jr., who isn't known, you know, they're saying, you know, this guy defensively, he's not a star, you know, but he'll light it up offensively. I'd rather take the offensive potential. If, you know what I mean? If Alfred's not going to give you the defensive potential, I mean...
Yeah, if he's not giving you either, and because also, this new era of the NBA, like it or not, is built upon scoring points and putting the ball in the bucket. There are teams like Denver averaging 110 points a night, and Denver's the 8th seed in the West right now. So if you can be a bad team and score a lot, you can be competitive more than being a bad team that can't score a lot. Which is why the Magic find themselves as double-digit underdogs against a team that can score a lot. They can't match an offensive output from a team like Houston or Golden State or even Denver. You know, Denver's a better team than Orlando, too. And I think we need to start that hashtag, bring back Jameer.
Yeah. I think a big part of this, and this goes to the last two games we played against Toronto, even though we won, and Atlanta, this team... And I think this is the core fundamental problem with this team and why sustainability is so hard from an offensive outlook. This team takes extremely poor shots. And it's not that they're not capable of making it, because they are. It's just at what percentage. Because collectively as a team, DJ Augustine takes really poor shots out of the pick and roll. Jeff Green overall just takes poor shots. Vucevic has beautiful footwork on the block, but he takes all his shots are mid-range. They're all mid-range. They're all settled. You know, those aren't good shots. And the team collectively takes really bad shots. And the nights that they make it, because they will make it some nights, you see the offense outburst. And the nights that we don't, are a lot more than we do. And that's why I think we see the fluctuation in offensive output is because, there's nights they'll make their shots. They are. They're NBA players. But over 82 games, those are bad shots. And they continue to take them.
I agree, especially on the Vucevic issue. Vucevic is playing very, what I would call, lazy offense. Because when you're squaring up on someone one-on-one, you want to look for an advantage. Pulling up is the least of all those advantages. And he settles for that quick, often. Squares up, pulls up. Squares up, pulls up.
Yep.
I want to see the ball go on the floor for a dribble, a drop step, a little pump fake, and an up and under. Where's that? He can do it. You know he can do it. We've seen him do it. He's got a wealth of offensive game. Vucevic is not a poor offensive player. We have a lot of criticism for Vucevic, but most of it's not on his offensive game. But his shot selection, very much so, at least this season. And that's why Vucevic's only averaging 14 points a game, I believe, as opposed to these past seasons where he was closing in on 20 and looking like a potential borderline all-star type center. He's not going to be that. Vucevic has plateaued. But I think a change of scenery could benefit Vucevic. I think the Magic could get something nice back for him. And Boston's interested, and there are other clubs that are. But the Magic, I think, might be asking too much, as they're prone to do. And it's certainly not just the Magic that do that, overvalue their own assets. But they're not going to get Marcus Smart for Vucevic, you know. So the bar needs to be set a little lower. And just go ahead and start making some moves. The core players I want to see and keep right now at this particular moment are Aaron Gordon, Bismack Biyombo, and to a lesser degree, Elfrid Payton and Mario Hezonja. I want to see get the minutes to see if they can be that guy. I like Biyombo. The investment was worth it. I don't know that he's going to ever be great, but I wasn't expecting him to be. I'm expecting him to be a key cog on a very good team, a strong defensive player that you can rely on to play crunch time minutes and shut down opposing centers, protect the rim. I'm pleased with him. A lot of people aren't, I know. But that's because the Magic aren't good. It has nothing to do with the way he's played, in my opinion.
We were talking on the break a little bit about each team needing kind of like a borderline dirty player toughness, because there's no toughness on the team. I mean, I see flashes out of Elfrid Payton where he gets fired up, but it doesn't, you know, it's very few and often. Biyombo is the one player, and he's not borderline dirty, but he's tough.
You know,
he can get nasty. He has a nasty streak in him.
So I definitely think that's essential going forward. Now, hey, what do you think about? I was just thinking about this. Do you think Vucevic would go to Portland for their first this season. Do you think that could happen? I really like Justin Pat out of Creighton. I like Steven Zimmerman too.
Now, Chris Axman, our podcast ringleader, will hate me for this, but I think Mason Plumlee is better than Vucevic anyway.
My girlfriend's been trying to trade me Mason Plumlee in our fantasy league for the last 3-4 weeks. And I have looked at his numbers, and he does a little bit of everything.
He's a really good passer. He's a good high post player. I get Chris, his gripe with that is that he's taking away from McCollum and Lillard, who need to have the ball when he has it. He's a distraction in that offense. I agree with that. But I think he's a better player with upside that Vucevic doesn't have. And hell, that applies to Myers Leonard as well, backing him up. Myers Leonard shows flashes that Vucevic doesn't have as well. That 3-point shot and athleticism. Myers Leonard is one heck of an athlete, really. All things said. Anyway, but that said, he's slow defensively. Has a lower basketball IQ. Fades from games. I'm not saying he's a solution, but I don't know that they're going to be all over Vucevic with those two guys there, is what I'm saying.
I see what you're saying.
Now, would they trade Allen Crabbe for them? They probably would. But I already mentioned Allen Crabbe as a potential Vucevic target. I don't think they'd give up that pick for Vucevic. I doubt it.
I see.
Do you think so?
I mean, even Steven Zimmerman. I mean, have you noticed, have you read anything or seen any of what he's doing down in the D-League, Erie?
Nothing.
He's averaging, like, double-doubles. I mean, there was a game where he had, like, 20 and 20.
I'm not sure how much to read into that, because I remember when I wrote the Celtics in 2012, they had Fab Melo, who's not in the league right now, and he got sent down to the D-League and had, like, 37 points, 19 rebounds, and 9 blocks, and then came up and did nothing again.
So, these
true NBA caliber players can go bonkers in the D-League and still not equate to anything. So I don't know what to read into that, is my ultimate standpoint on it. It might mean something, it might not. It's obviously good that he's putting up numbers and playing really well, but how much to read into it, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I do like him. There's something about left-handers. They just have some type of touch.
Yeah.
Their shot. I know there's no statistical or theoretical, you know, backing of that statement, but it just seems like lefties have a certain touch to their game, and he shows good footwork on the block. He does. So I'm curious what he could do. I mean, I think that's a reach to try to say the Magic will try to develop him or something, but I do like him.
Well, at this point, embracing the tank would involve calling up a D-leaguer, so I'm all for it.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. I think that they have plenty of options, and we'll figure out what they're going to do five games away from the trade deadline, February 23rd. We'll see what's going on.
Yeah, we'll close on that note. Neither of us are high-volume tweeters during games, but I tweet a tweet here and there, and we'll have some post-game analysis on that Houston game. I will be watching it, Magic fans. Apologize for those missing two games. I'm not going back to delve into them. I see no point. I want L's right now. That's not a popular – you're not going to hear any of the players saying that. So we'll leave it on that note. It's Chris Chartier on Twitter, ChrisChartier. And 33 Trigger, if you want to hit us up, we're always available to talk Magic basketball and whatever else, probably besides Trump, because no one really wants to talk about that. But, man, it's rough right now to be a sports writer trying to focus on basketball with the political and social status of America as a whole right now. But, you know, basketball will always cheer me up, and even if the Magic lose tonight, I'm excited to see Aaron Gordon again. And I hope Hezonja gets some minutes. I'm not putting him in on any daily fantasy lineups, I'll tell you that. But I hope Hezonja gets some minutes. And any closing words, Chris?
No, I'm rooting for the Lakers, rooting for Dallas, rooting for the Suns, and I'm hoping we get L's.
Yeah. Embrace the tank. See you soon, Magic fans.